And today we are joined by Nick and Rich.
You did it backwards.
Dang it.
Leave this in. Leave it all in.
Hello, and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. My name is Marines.
I'm Nicole Sweeney.
And today we are joined by Rich and Nick.
Hi, I'm Rich Camilucci. I am the co-host of Quarter Mile at a Time, a Fast and Furious podcast that we'll be morphing into Ready to Believe You, a Ghostbusters podcast, along with Nick Lathan. And I'm also the host of the Whack Pack every day on Instagram, at Rich Cami, C-A-M-I, where Rip rips open another pack of trading cards every single day. We raise money for great causes and organizations, and at every $100 that we raise, I, yes, indeed, chew the old gum that we find in those old packs. That's been the weird quarantine thing I've gotten into. The cards, not the gum. I'm not into that. But we do it.
And I'm Nick Jenkins. I'm a producer and director for Complexly Media, making things like Crash Course and Eons. And I don't have any gum chewing hobbies right now, but I'm thinking of starting one.
And Rich and Nick are back with us, as I'm sure you saw in the title of this episode. And in case you didn't, if this just like auto played, the sound of their voices should have been a clue to you that we are diving back into the MCU. You may or may not have heard that we were doing weekly live show discussions of each episode of WandaVision for its 9-week run. And because we loved the show so much, we thought that it would be cool to take a step back and talk about this thing as a whole. This show takes place pretty quickly after the conclusion of Avengers Endgame. The show begins as what appears to be a 1950s sitcom starring Wanda and Vision in their new home in Westview, New Jersey, as the pair try to blend into middle-class suburban sitcom life. Aside from the major tonal differences from anything in the MCU, we know that something is very off about this because Vision is, of course, dead. Not blipped, but dead. The show also introduces some weird breaks in the sitcom universe to hint at the world's wrongness. Each episode of the show magically moves Wanda and Vision into a new decade, updating the aesthetic and sitcom tropes and theme music accordingly. As we move forward in time, the breaks in the universe also expand and become more pronounced. There are many new characters populating the sitcom world, most notably Wanda's friends in the sitcom world, Agnes, the nosy neighbor, and Geraldine, who is new in town like Wanda. And in the third episode, Wanda goes through basically an entire pregnancy in under a week and gives birth to twins, Billy and Tommy. But then we learn that Geraldine is not who she seems to be. She is, in fact, Sword Agent Monica Rambeau. Wanda yeets her out of the magical sitcom world, which we learn is taking place inside of a giant red hex dome thing, and it is completely cut off from the outside world. We rewind a little bit to Monica in the MCU real world, rematerializing after the second snap. She is in the hospital at her mother's bedside, but Maria Rambeau died during the 5 years that Monica missed. Monica goes back to work at Sword, an agency that her mother built, but is now run by Tyler Hayward. Per a protocol Maria put in place, Monica is temporarily grounded, which is why she gets sent to assist the FBI with a missing persons case. In Westview, New Jersey, the FBI agent that she meets with is none other than Jimmy Woo from Ant-Man and the Wasp. While trying to figure out what the hell is going on with this, like, inaccessible town, Monica tries to enter the hex and gets sucked in and becomes Geraldine, up until she momentarily remembers the actual world when Wanda mentions being a twin. Monica slash Geraldine mentions Ultron, and Wanda does not like this, and we get our first very real confirmation that Wanda has, like, a ton of control over the world of the hex when she ejects Monica. When Monica goes missing, a makeshift base is set up by Sword. Sword also recruits a team of scientists from a bunch of fields to help them figure out what is going on, including Darcy Lewis, who apparently loved her internship with Jane so much that she switched majors and now has a PhD in astrophysics. We gradually learn that the hex is, one, entirely created and controlled by Wanda, two, rewriting reality. This rewriting of reality is how Vision and the children exist. They are constructed from Wanda's magic. As we are discovering this, so is Vision, but like much, much more slowly than us. And Wanda won't tell him the truth, and he's very unhappy about this, and they are fighting about it. And then there's a knock at the door, door, and it is a mysterious guest. It's her brother, Pietro, only he's not played by the same person who played him in Age of Ultron. Outside of the Hex, Hayward is actually interested in all of this because he had been trying, against Vision's living will, which is a thing we learn he had, to reanimate this sentient weapon and basically wanted to use Wanda to do it. Wanda made the Hex spontaneously in a state of profound grief. She went to the Sword HQ to try to reclaim Vision's body, and they were like, actually, no, that's like a lot of vibranium and it's very expensive, so bye. Wanda drives to Westview after being told no because she has a deed with a note from Vision that reads to grow old in. When she gets there, she breaks down, but because she is basically the most powerful being on Earth, her explosive grief is like actually explosive, but explosive with magic. And then just like a cloud of red explodes out from her, and that's how the Hex exists. The other vital detail that I have not yet covered is that Agnes is also not who she seems. She was, in fact, Agatha all along. She is actually Agatha Harkness, a witch who steals other witches' power. She came to the Hex to try to understand how Wanda did it, and after taking Wanda through a like heartbreaking tour of her grief, Agatha realizes that Wanda is a witch from legend, someone who was supposed to be just a myth. She is the Scarlet Witch. Basically, she is like a chaos witch, and that is how she can just like make shit from nothing. Outside the Hex, we learn that S.W.O.R.D. did manage to reassemble Vision's parts, but they couldn't animate him until they took something that had been in the Hex and came back out and used some of that energy to reanimate a colorless Vision. White Vision goes into the Hex to try to kill Wanda. Real Vision, or Magic Vision, learns from Darcy, who is also in the Hex now, everything that the audience knows. Magic Vision and White Vision fight. Then they have a delightful philosophical conversation about the ship of Theseus, and White Vision is like, oh, I have to go now. And he goes off on who knows where. He's on a journey. And Wanda and Agatha fight, and Wanda eventually accepts and embraces her power, that she is indeed the Scarlet Witch. And she has to tear down the Hex because even though the Hex is the only reason that her family exists, like without the Hex, there is no Magic Vision or her children. She's also torturing all of the people inside of Westview. They're all basically being held hostage and they're like feeling her grief. So Wanda has to tear down the Hex, just say goodbye to Vision and her children. And then she has to go on the run because, you know, now she's a criminal after holding an entire town hostage. And she disappears into the woods to figure out what being the Scarlet Witch means. And the mid-credits scene also shows that Monica is gonna go do some stuff in space that's gonna take her to Captain Marvel 2, I'm sure. And that is it. That's this show.
Hey, you really left out the Mephisto arc. But,
Okay, internet.
So we are going to start where we always start, and that is with the question, did you like it?
I absolutely loved it. I think this was a really unique and touching experience.
I will also say that I mean that I absolutely loved this. And not just, you know, from episodes 3 on. I loved it from the beginning.
Yeah, I guess I sort of cheated by saying that part of why we're doing this in the first place is that we loved this show so much while we were talking about it episode by episode. But I also very much, very much love this. Like Rich, I liked it from go. I didn't really care where they were going. I appreciated the meta TV stuff that they were doing before I understood the larger project. And then, you know, the larger project is a grief show. So like, I'm all in. I'm all in for this.
Yes, same. I also really loved this. And as we were doing those weekly live shows, it almost became a joke that we were asking this question at the top too, like, did you like this episode? And the answer was always yes, because it was so immediately like our jam. And I think usually when we talk about things like this, we kind of dive in characters first, but I really, really want to talk about how this sits in the MCU and its place mm-hmm. in the larger MCU. How did you experience this as like a continuation of the stories that we've seen? What were some of your favorite connections? Where were things you noticed? Let's start there.
As recorded on this podcast, I struggled with Endgame. Mm-hmm. I don't know, there was a lot about it that didn't sit well with me, and I have since gone back and rewatched it, and I've actually listened to a couple other people talk about it and have a new appreciation for it. So it definitely changed, but I feel like I was at a saturation point with Marvel, that it wasn't anything that they were necessarily doing wrong, although I still think there's some stuff in Endgame that I don't really care for. But I needed a break from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then unintentionally, we got a huge break. And I think this, for me, was the perfect place to step back into it. Because I still haven't even seen Far From Home. I haven't seen the Spider-Man movie. I just really don't care about Spider-Man. So there's that. But this was great for me because it was focusing on someone who lost so much in all of that, that it allowed it. It really grounded me in being able to re-enter, think about the broader cinematic Marvel Cinematic Universe, but also just follow a character story or a couple character story. So that's how I came back to it. And it was exactly what I needed to kind of remember that I really loved this.
Yeah. I mean, that extended break that no one could have planned for, along with like, because from what I understand, like, this wasn't supposed to be the first thing to hit Disney Plus, even, because like Black Widow was supposed to be out last year. Boy, I just remember finishing that first episode and going, just like, that was delightfully daffy. It was just such a different flavor,
yeah,
that like none of us knew, you know, they could provide. Like, we thought Thor Ragnarok was like a huge shift in tone, but like this was like a tectonic shift compared to what they normally do. And eventually we got to what they normally do, but like those first two episodes, and to go back to something that Nicole said, I don't think they were like they were more than just like a meta kind of look at, you know, 50s and 60s sitcoms. Like, what do we all kind of like turn to when we need escapism? We turn to movies, we turn to TV. Mm-hmm. And what do the characters that we turn to for escapism turn to for escapism? And it turns out in Wanda's case, it's TV. Mm-hmm. And so like those first two episodes, the fact that there wasn't much happening and they were just straight up sitcoms, like, after all was said and done, like, still completely tracked for me with the whole idea of this being a grief show. And then with the commercials, also like examining her trauma as well. Like, this is much more than just like, well, the first two you got to kind of get through or whatever. Like, no, it's all part of a larger piece to me.
Yeah. The meta component of it is just, I still find that so incredibly, I don't know, wonderful. The idea that this character, who is routinely written as a tragic background character, I mean, not background, whatever, but she hadn't been the A character in anything that she had been in. She had been a side character with a deeply tragic story in everything she had been in. And then she writes her own story and she's a sitcom star. Like, I like that concept in and of itself is wonderful, and I'm obsessed with it. To go back to what Nick said about the like the way in which this was a re-entry point for a lot of people into the MCU, I think that this worked out so perfectly. Like, what a happy accident that this thing that is meaningfully different is your way like back into the thing, and the MCU's foray into like this significant expansion that it's now doing, right, with all of the TV shows that are coming out this year and whatever. I just finished rewatching the entire MCU. So this is, I rewatched WandaVision today for the third time. After the show finished, I watched it once, and then I started rewatching the entire MCU, and then I watched WandaVision again. So all of this is like extremely fresh in my brain, and watching it in that sort of like larger episodic fashion, it like really does feel like the correct next step, like this, like the next thing to explore. We had Endgame that ends, I was just sobbing, right, for the last however, I don't know, 20 minutes, more, probably more than that. I don't know when I started crying. Doesn't matter. The point is that at some point I started crying and I didn't stop crying. And what a way to go forward from that, to now have this show where we're getting to really like sit with that. And who better to ask us to sit with that than Wanda, than this character who is routinely like, she is tragic. Like, she has experienced all of this loss, and that is so central to her character. And so giving the audience the opportunity to explore that, I also appreciated all of the ways in which this show introduced us to bigger questions about what the blip meant for this world, for this universe. There's so much going on in this show that, like, I think you absolutely could appreciate the thing that this show is doing by itself itself, but oh man, does it do so much work in the larger universe of the MCU.
I had a very similar experience because for a lot of the movies in the MCU, like I've seen them once and it was for the purpose of the podcast, right? We did that whole thing. And I definitely, at the end of that project, I had also reached that saturation point where I was kind of like, oh, superhero movies, MCU, like I need a break. And so WandaVision was wonderful. But what it also did for me and the MCU is that I finished it and I also had that, oh man, do I want to watch all the movies again? Like I had never had that thought. I hadn't even watched like single MCU movies over again after we finished the project. So the fact that I watched this and I was like, no man, I want to go back. And independently of Nicole, she was like, I'm watching these movies again. And I was like, oh my God, me too. So I just think that the WandaVision did so much work to like remind me and reintroduce me into the world. And I think the thing that I appreciated about it so much is it addressed a lot of the things. Like I am sure if you were to go back and listen to those episodes, we joke about or comment on like a number of things, like the, you know, damage that's happening in the background and mm-hmm. characters experiencing lots of traumatic things and a lot of grief and not having the space or the opportunity to deal with it. And then so for this to do that and for it to also take advantage of the format that it's in and say, okay, we're a TV show. We've got this additional time. We've got this additional space. Like, what are we looking at? What's the story we're telling? And I think it did so well. It took advantage of that format after watching it and going back to the MCU. It is also very additive. And there were things that I watched with the WandaVision knowledge now in my head. And I was like, ooh, I like this stuff better now. And that includes Age of Ultron and Endgame. Mm-hmm. Like, I like them so much better now because of the work that WandaVision did. So if you ask me, that's always like a plus and a win.
I remember after the 80s episode where that ends with a very special guest that's been recast, and then Disney Plus asks if you wanted to watch Age of Ultron. I'm like, no, this is what they're doing. They're just trying to make that movie good in retrospect. Which, like, you know, it does get more merit after the fact.
It's funny because, yes, I remember finishing that episode and seeing that the Ultron promo and, like, joking, like, this is an attack. Like, this is an attack from Disney Plus trying to make me watch this movie that I hated. And then I was doing this MCU rewatch project and I finished Age of Ultron and I was like, I didn't hate that, actually. As it turns out, I did not hate that movie.
I'm convinced that that's their phase four mission, is to just like go back and like positively retcon like some of their more sagging movies, for lack of a better term. Like, if they can figure out a way through the She-Hulk show that they've announced to make Incredible Hulk like a work of art, then I just throw my hands up and just like, yeah, whatever y'all want to do, let's go. Tatiana Maslany all the way. Yes, sure.
I feel like we run the risk of having a George Lucas thing, though, where we'll like 10 years from now, you'll have people say, oh, but when they made the Incredible Hulk, they totally meant for this to happen. I'm like, no, they did not at the time. No. It's a really strange thing to hear all this and feel the very much the exact same way. The one thing that's weird is I was one who did really struggle at the beginning. I didn't dislike it, but I'm not really attached to that. I don't know, that even though I saw it when I was a kid, I'm not really attached to that era of television. It doesn't mean a lot to me. And so for me, it was just sitting there trying to figure out the mystery as opposed to taking it in. And so after about episode three, I was kind of like, OK, I'm a little tired of the shtick. I would like to see a little bit more plot. Well, and then the plot just got moving after that. And now going back after seeing the whole thing, I can go back and those are much more meaningful episodes now. In a way that, to me, when they started, they weren't as meaningful. Doesn't mean I thought they were bad. I didn't. I thought they were great. I was just very impatient for the plot to kick in.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. It is not surprising to me that, like, those first couple episodes had a very your mileage may vary, like, vibe to them, and they were not going to work for everybody. It is not surprising to me that they chose to release the first two episodes together.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, the first episode only had kind of that one scene of like weirdness and sort of like weird break. And so giving us both made it clearer that there is a larger mystery going on here. Don't worry, it's coming. So I understand that perspective, even if I don't share it. After seeing the whole thing, I do feel like those first couple of episodes are extremely necessary. Like, there is a way in which you could take this total runtime of, I think it's like 5 hours and 40 minutes, and you could cut this down and get it under 3 hours. The actual sort of plot of this show can fit into that time. But the plot of this show is really just in service of this like character study and portrait of grief. And in order to do justice to that, I think you do need all of the time and space to sort of sit in that and like sit in the idea of this woman's like full on break with reality. And like, you need all of that in order to do the thing that it does at the end so effectively. Even if it maybe lost some people at the top, I still think that as a whole, the total thing is stronger for having all of it there.
What kind of happened to me was a bit of the inverse, where I started off super strong at the top, and then like I enjoyed it heavily all throughout. And then the finale, it just seemed like a lot of the same Marvel climax kind of stuff that we're used to getting. And so I kind of like checked out, and then on a rewatch and really like digging in and paying attention to, you know, a lot of the actual, like, you know, dialogue between characters and how heartbreaking a lot of those things actually were. It's like, oh yeah, no, this actually did more than stick the landing. No, how do you more than stick a landing? It stuck the landing. But also, and to what Nicole said about the length of it, that is like such a needle to thread in TV, because like, yes, in TV, you do have the time to kind of like make those deeper explorations of character and theme, which is one of the reasons why I just freaking love TV so much. But at the same time, because so much of it needs to be made, a lot of it is bad. And the fact that like it did not overstay its welcome at all, and it accomplished so much in genre and in character and in satisfaction, in fan service. Like, it was fan service in a good way that was happening. You know, even though there were a few fan servicey things that concluded with a lot left to be desired, I'm sure we'll get to one big fan service thing that left a lot of people wanting more.
Yeah, we'll talk about boner jokes. It's great.
Yes, undoubtedly, we will have words about that. I will also say, though, that your point about like fan service things that left people wanting, I mean, that thing being a legitimate like failing of the show. But, you know, there are plenty of ways in which the show didn't do things that people wanted it to do, and that I think that it made the correct choice. Like, I don't think it needed to do what people wanted it to do. And that experience of watching the show week on week, and not just watching it, but like watching it and, you know, having an hour long discussion with the internet about it week on week, that is another way in which this show improved my larger experience of the MCU. Like, some of those things that I was sort of disappointed or underwhelmed by, my big thing going back through it is all of the ways in which I often found myself wanting things to be more than they were. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that part of what is so appealing about superhero stories is the way in which you take very simple human concepts and you add a larger than life magical element to them. And so I think that sometimes there is this desire to see it take on more, and then feeling sort of underwhelmed and disappointed. And several of the movies that I found that I enjoyed a lot more on rewatch, I think that part of it is that I did not have any of those expectations, you know, that like I was more willing to meet them where they were. And I think that, like, yes, the show could have done all sorts of like wild and crazy things in terms of bringing in all of these other characters and threads and whatever. But again, it is to the benefit and to the credit of this thing that it focused on being this very specific story of Wanda's grief.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if you want to talk about meta TV, that's TV, baby. Like, Lost, Game of Thrones. Like, everyone's always going to build something up much bigger than it's actually going to be. So,
right.
I think that the experience of how this sits in the MCU is so also intertwined in the experience of how we all saw it together. Mm-hmm. And the sort of like, I don't know how it was for you guys, but like, my timeline was full of it. People were talking about it. All of the fan theories, the videos on the internet going into the comic books and the fan theories. It was so like special to be going into this like season of TV, but with all of the backstory and legwork of not only the MCU, but of Marvel, right?
Yeah.
We had all of this additional material that was adding to our context of watching, and that you kind of met that with like, I don't know, this perfect moment of watching some things in critical mass, like in the middle of a pandemic, and all of us having time. Let's fan theorize all day kind of thing. So the whole experience together was really, really interesting. And when we got to the end and people, you know, there were some people who of course are going to be disappointed with what it ended up being, but all of that stuff to me was like, we did it to ourselves. Like we led ourselves down those roads of like the theories and whatnot. The story itself told something really complete, and everything it did, it seeded, and it made sense for what it was doing. And I wasn't disappointed with a lot of things, like in terms of like from a storytelling perspective, nothing came out of left field in a way that I felt like, you know, the last season of Game of Thrones, where I was like, this is completely unearned. Everything was earned. A lot of things didn't happen the way that I thought it would because I was thinking too big, but that's on me. That's not on the TV show.
I would like to just sort of agree and sum up that also one of the things that I like about the fact that we didn't get a Mephisto, we didn't get a lot of the things that people were speculating about, means that this story will be important and valuable in its own right without those things. Oh, this is where they introduced the big bad, or this is where they did this. It's just a story about Wanda's grief, right, and how she's processing it. And that's great. And I love that. And I guess the only thing that I would say that really did, it was kind of shocking to me, was the Quicksilver thing, because it didn't seem like it was something we had to figure out. It seemed like what the show was telling us, right down to the subtitles. It was the Fox version of Quicksilver arrives at the door is what the subtitles said. And so it's like, oh, okay, they're doing this. This is huge. This is like Avengers 2.0. Wow. And then to have it just be, no, haha, we trolled you. That did kind of piss me off. It was like, well that seems mean. Like, I don't feel like that was needed, but it doesn't, like, that's a very small thing. It pissed me off at the time, but it didn't detract from the story. It didn't detract from Wanda's story. It didn't detract from anything. It just detracted from that thing that I felt like I had a joke pulled on me. And I don't particularly appreciate that.
I don't want to be pranked by my TV show.
Exactly.
And when it gets like down to the nuts and bolts of like Marvel lore and things that I'm not Eric Voss of New Rockstars, so I'm not well versed in all those things. But, you know, it does kind of like make sense story-wise, because it still is like this one universe that we've been in the whole time, and we obviously know that we're going to be going into multiverses and stuff like that, so it does kind of like start to prime the pump on other things. It did feel like a primer, just like, this isn't it, but get ready.
And my asterisk of like, I didn't really feel disappointed with storytelling things was definitely the Quicksilver thing, because you know, that felt like something that was a little bit thrown in. It didn't affect the core story of Wanda and her grief, but I was also disappointed with that. And I know, you know, there is that portion of it like, well, there could be more, this could have been the beginning, but it felt incomplete. Or the way that it was completed within the confines of the story, I also was like, are you kidding me? For why did we do this? For why?
To bring it back to, again, just kind of another meta TV thing, you know what it felt like? It felt like Sweeps Week, where a show pulls like a big stunt to juice, you know, ratings, and then, like, you know, usually ends up kind of resolving itself, not really meaning much. But I remember the end of that episode going like, hold on a sec, because I didn't have the subtitles on, so I didn't really like, oh, I had to like go to IMDb like, wait, is that the other? Because I kind of fell off on the X-Men movies personally, and I was like, wait, is that the dude? Oh, well, that's exciting. But yeah, that just kind of hit me as Monty was talking about that. Just like, oh no, it's a complete sweep move. It's a stunt casting.
Yes. And in a series that felt really thoughtful in a lot of ways. And I mean, it still had the, like, you know, the big moments of like superheroes and sort of the themes that were a little bit more pronounced or whatnot. But for it to be leading up to a boner joke, I was like, my WandaVision? I don't think so. So
that was definitely a joke that belonged inside of one of the actual episodes. Not part of the larger story that they're trying to tell.
I guess that was it. It didn't feel like it fit the rest of the show to me. And so it just seemed like it was directed at me for being excited about something. So I took it that way. But like I said, it did not detract from the rest of the show.
No.
It was just this little moment that I'm like, well, don't do that. Dang.
So we talked a little bit too, like as we're talking about MCU things, I think Nick was the one who mentioned like looking back, you know, in 10 years, will we sort of retcon our own experience? And it reminded me of the ways that this kind of retconned Wanda's story a little bit. How did you guys feel about those portions of the storytelling?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I loved it both from a story perspective. That's because there is that thing in Age of Ultron, like these are the only two who survived. So It makes you go, why?
Why? Right. What was it about them that made them special enough to survive?
Exactly. And so from a story perspective, I really liked it. But also this show did more than once have some really cool visual storytelling moments, like that shot of the silhouette of the quote unquote Scarlet Witch coming out of the Mind Stone sort of from pre-Age of Ultron. That will live with me for a while. That was majestic. Like it really looked amazing, and it was cut back to just a shot of her eyes dealing with it and processing it. Oh God, I loved all of that. So I loved that it doesn't change anything about her character. Mm-hmm. It just makes you understand more deeply a little bit about her power and a little bit more about her.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in Age of Ultron, it's like, well, we just can't say the word mutants.
Yeah,
we're about to add a whole lot more to the big three, is what I'm saying. And so, yeah, we got witches now, and we're going to have vampires soon, and we're going to have mutants. But yeah, no, again, it's only enriching what's been happening.
Enriching. That's a really good way to say it, Rich.
Oh, my God.
Oh, shucks.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think I even appreciated more during my rewatch as, like, we went to Age of Ultron, and she very clearly says, you know, the story of the missile, like we were hiding underneath the bed or the table or whatever it was, and the missile landed and we watched it for however long, and it we kept expecting it to go off, and I was like, oh, this is here all along. Mm-hmm. Like the only thing that they're really adding is the fact that it didn't go off. It was because of Wanda and her magic. So it was very much enriching. It was adding all of these things, and it felt neat. It felt like we were discovering something together.
Yes.
It never felt like it was going back and be like, forget that stuff you knew. It was like, remember that stuff you knew? I got more. So it was so fun to watch.
Well, and I don't remember if it was you or Nicole on one of the live, because I was in the audience for all of the live things because I was excited about this show. But I don't remember if it was one of you who said something like, well, the key here that we didn't really think about maybe in Age of Ultron, but that is shown in all of the Iron Man films, is that Stark tech works. And so the idea that one that crashed into them was just a dud actually doesn't make much sense.
Right.
But that she's got some sort of hex on it. Oh, that's a little bit different. And it actually makes that story make even a little bit more sense. So for me, from a comic, from a lore perspective, it just added some, it enriched it. I agree.
I also would like to just interject here and say that while I wasn't able to, you know, partake and watch in the live episodes, I did try to do as much homework as I could. I watched the first and last episodes. And in the first episode where you two are like, oh man, and you know she's gonna bring a baby into this. I'm like, oh, y'all don't even know. She's gonna
wait,
bring
okay,
two.
Okay, listen, Rich, if you did that, you missed the actual best. I want to say it's like episode 3 or 4. I don't know. The clip is on Twitter. It's the actual best moment is the episode where Wanda first has a flash of like zombie of like dead vision with like the stone missing or whatever. We were talking about like what that could mean, and Mari theorized that Wanda had like gone and picked up his body and drove. We talked about her taking a big long road trip, and I was like, I'm sorry, like she's like traveling all this way. And Mari's like, it was two state lines
in a Buick, which have spacious trunks.
We thought we got it right because there is a like a moment kind of confirming.
Hayward basically tells us in the next episode,
yes,
that we were right.
Yes.
But then later, hey, we learned that Hayward lied. But for a hot moment in the sun there, we were feeling really great that our zombie road trip dreams were real. It was pretty incredible. It's a pretty great time.
Nick, you mentioned a little bit about the visual storytelling, and we have talked some about the sitcom portion of it as well. But I just, going back to I don't know. I think that you cannot discuss this without talking about the ways that those episodes really captured, like, the decades that they were in the sitcom look and feel. And also, I don't know, the music, the theme songs, all of that stuff of the production. So winning, so lovely. I enjoyed every single one of those moments. Like, I still don't have Agatha All Along out of my head, to be honest.
Truly a gem.
I mean, they went and EGOT. The EGOT folks with Robert Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez, like, yeah, they were like, oh, we're not even gonna like full ass this, we're gonna double ass this is what we're gonna do, you know. Especially even I don't know if y'all watched the assembled doc on, like, their little behind the scenes.
Yes,
for that. Yes. First episode, like, not only do they actually bring in a live studio audience, but, like, everyone was, like, in period clothing.
Mm-hmm. The studio audience was in period clothing, to be clear about what Rich is saying.
Yes, yes, exactly. They, like, consulted with Dick Van Dyke about just what it was like to make TV back then and stuff like that. In the words of, John Hammond, they spared no expense.
And you could feel it in the viewing experience too. Like, watching those first two episodes, especially, there are so many lovely little moments where, like, for example, Wanda or Vision will transform, and you can see, like, the slight glitch from what happened is they literally hit stop. The actor went and changed and the actor came back. And then they hit record again, because that is how that would have been done. And then later in the show, we have the more, like, seamless computer assisted transitions. And so, like, we know that they can do that, right? But they made such a point of making the sitcom episodes feel so period appropriate. One of the things that I also really loved about that assembled behind the scenes thing was the VFX guy talking about how, like, he had apprenticed under people who worked on Bewitched.
Yeah.
And so, like, how exciting it was that usually if you get an MCU job, you're like, okay, cool, I'm going to go, like, you know, blow stuff up. And, you know, now, like, the special effects that he was doing were, like, you know, making plates fly around, like an actual plate on a string, and like getting to do that kind of stuff was really cool. All of that was wonderful. And then the theme music, just truly so good. All of the songs, so good. I think Agatha All Along is number one, but, like, the 90s episode where they, like, had the actual lead singer of Bikini Kill guest to sing, oh my god, I love it so much. So good.
Agatha All Along was, like, perfect.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. Like, that was a piece of music that I wasn't expecting them to launch into at all. So it was a complete shock. You know, I was expecting different opening themes, but I wasn't expecting that. And it is just the most catchy and well performed as well by Catherine Hahn. Like, the whole thing is just, it's so pitch perfect. And it landed at exactly the right moment, because I can't quite remember what episode it was in, but I do remember feeling that things were getting a little bit down and dour. And then that song comes in and just puts a smile back on my face. So it was quite the treat.
Catherine Hahn in general has always been excellent for anyone who's known of her. I love that this has kind of been, you know, her kind of coming out on the larger stage and people knowing her in a wide way. But yeah, man, I'm just so happy for her. And her performance is another one that, like, it's like very, very season one of The Good Place, where after you get that turn and then you go back and watch it from the beginning again, it's a whole new show. Mm-hmm. The way that, like, she is kind of, like, introducing chaos into Wanda's shows, her programs, to use a term like I'm 75 years old, her programs, like, you know, where she's, like, you know, offering a little booze, or in the 80s episode when she's like, do you want me to take that again?
Yes.
It's like, so, oh my god, it is like very, very, it's the good layered stuff.
It is just great. Yeah, the stuff like the do you want me to run that again was also great too, because it was like part of the way in which the show was genuinely seeding these things. Like, that is a thing that we talked about after that too, that, like, there was something about that felt off. It read as genuine that Wanda was confused by her asking that question. And so, like, that, you know, we had, I don't know, some sizable chunk of our discussion of that episode ended up being about that. Like, what did that line mean? Like, what were the implications of that? Like, in this way that worked in the episode, that worked with the information that we had at that moment in time, but also just reads so wonderfully when you go back once you know where the show ends.
It was such a good balance of like letting us figure things out on our own. Like this show felt like it trusted me, the viewer. It trusted my intelligence. And there were things that I was figuring out, and even before the show really confirmed them. But then that meant those moments of confirmation were delightful. It didn't feel like, oh, like I guessed it. It was like, yes, I got it right. And Agatha was definitely one of those things that, like, from, you know, very early on, you're like, something's not right, something's not right, something's not right. And there were moments that I was like, well, maybe. And then I was like, no, something's not right. So by the time you get to Agatha All Along and you get a whole musical number saying, you were right, viewer, look at you go. I was like, look at me go. This is great.
I want to talk for just a second about performance, because we're talking about Catherine Hahn.
Yes.
But there were a couple of things in here that were really, from my filmmaker heart, I was watching, and like, there's a scene in here that I would put in a directing class to talk about communication. And it's a scene, it's probably the most heartbreaking scene in the movie. It's where, or in the show, is where she walks into Vision, in to see Vision's body, and then puts her hand on his head. Mm-hmm. And says, I can't feel you. And her acting transition from, as she walks up to him, she starts, obviously, if you look at her eyes, she starts with uncertainty. Then she goes to some hope, and then she is expectant, and then she's devastated. Like, it all, there is this wonderful bit that she's communicating without words. Like, the I can't feel you is there, and it does its job, but it is something that, like, I don't know if Matt Shakman, the director, and Elizabeth Olsen worked on that and kind of figured out those beats, or if that was all Elizabeth Olsen just saying, like, yeah, you're going to go put your hand on his head and you're going to be disappointed. But however they did that, and this show is just littered with that. And it's one of the reasons I really love watching Elizabeth Olsen work. She is so good at communicating with very little, and she's done it a lot in the MCU. Usually it's on sort of a bigger scale, but with little moments like that, like, she, it was just so impressive to me. And I think the same thing is true of the other great line in this movie, that, you know, what is grief if not love persevering? Like, that's a very small line, but it does so much work. And because Paul Bettany delivers it so well, and it's directed so well, that there is just so much connection there. And I think that's the big thing. Like, a show like this, a movie or a show like this, doesn't have to always be 100% on for me to fall in love with it. What it needs are moments. It needs those moments that touch me in some way, that touch my soul or my heart or even my brain in some way. It can be a great joke. It can be a great performance, whatever it may be. But man, just the little performances in this that talk about grief, that talk about loss, that talk about sorrow. It was just on another level for me.
I'm glad you brought that line up, too, because obviously that line got memed to hell, and we all love the memes. We all love the internet. But on a rewatch, boy, it just hits so hard. And it's while they're watching Malcolm in the Middle. And it's like, oh, I never thought I'd cry around anything around Malcolm in the Middle. But here I am.
I also appreciate the fact that it's not like this rapturous love affair that they're showing us. It's a small, tiny moment of connection, mm-hmm. that's sometimes all you need. And for that, it was beautiful to me that they're just sitting watching this show that is her comfort, and he's learning about humor. But then in that one little moment, he gives her something. And that is, there was so much about it that just really worked so well for me in communicating the ideas of loss and grief and connection. Like, these two odd people out connecting.
Well, to that scene that Nick was talking about in terms of when Wanda goes to see the body, right? She sees him pulled apart, and what we're seeing is basically like a robot pulled apart. But it caused such a visceral reaction in me, mm-hmm. to see him like pulled apart in that way that I didn't expect. It would have been like seeing, you know, a person dissected or whatnot. Like, that's how I felt seeing his wires exposed. So, like, those moments, I agree. And, you know, thematically, sucker for a grief story. I am just a sucker for a grief story. But yes, those moments and the performances around it really, really sold it for me as well. Elizabeth Olsen also had these moments where she brings you back into sort of like the darker side of this. Like the nefarious side of this is that WandaVision, I love her. I get it. She held an entire town hostage, right? She trapped these people in pain and misery. So there were also those moments. And one of the big ones was when she is facing off with Monica right before she yeets her out. And she like a little turn of the countenance when she's like, what did you just say? And you remember, oh, this is the most powerful person on the planet. Like, oh no. And you just see that come through on Elizabeth Olsen's face. And you just are like, oh man, oh, we cannot forget here that this is also like very bad.
This brings me to something that I really wanted to talk about. Nicole and I talked about this at some point, probably in one of our work meetings where we were done talking about work. But we the scene where she walks out of the Hex with the drone and she confronts Hayward. I encourage anyone who wants to learn about visual storytelling to watch that scene and watch everything that's happening in the scene, from performances to why is it at night? Well, it's at night so we can see the lasers on the guns turn on Hayward very quickly and very clearly. So we understand exactly what's happening. Like, it is so efficiently. And when I say efficient, efficient can come off as kind of like cheap. It's not. It's not that it's cheap. It's so efficient at its storytelling that we don't need a lot of words and dialogue to explain what's going on. We just see it all. And her performance is so good because she comes out not the same person she was inside the Hex. She comes out as a very, very angry human being.
And like hints of her accent creep back in, which we hadn't heard at any point on the show prior to that, but you can hear it in that confrontation for the first time. Just so good.
Yeah, good stuff.
Another line, if we're bringing up lines, that didn't hit me till the second time around was like at the end, at the end of the last episode, where Vision asks, like, what am I? And, you know, this is a bit more of the overt, where she actually like answers a question that we've been kind of wondering. But when she said like your wires, your blood, your bone, like she gave part of herself to make him, which is, you know, like it like hit me in the moment. But yeah, it's also like, oh, you're incredibly powerful and you could just do that. That's incredible.
That whole thing leads to a line that I think is really powerful. And I don't remember it exactly, but I remember how he ends it, which is the, you know, well, I've been this and I've been this. Who knows what I'll be the next time? And that was like, oh God, that was beautiful.
Yes. And a good entry or like a good moment, not only in Wanda's story, right? Because this is very much Wanda's story of her grief, but just like a good piece of their story together and what that has been. And it has been a lot of like self-discovery, especially on Vision's part of what it means to be human. And so now we're also getting the sense that this will be also their story, like, you know, meeting each other and every time they do being a little bit different, or him being in a different form, and you know, all of the stuff with White Vision, which we don't know where that's going, but he's out there now and he's a version of Vision. And you know, like, you've got all these things that you just your mind is starting to fill in those things in the future, and it just makes sense for who these two characters are.
We've talked a lot about Elizabeth Olsen's performance and Catherine Hahn and Paul Bettany. I mean, the show doesn't work without those performances. One of the things that I was struck by on today's the third time through is really everybody in this show had to do all of these really wonderful, like, quick turns at various like points throughout, where, you know, they're in sort of one state and then the other. But you mentioned the scene where Wanda like kicks Monica out, and, you know, everything that we're seeing playing out on Wanda's face. But Monica's half of that is also really, really impressive to watch.
Yes.
So Tiana Paris comes in and she is playing this incredibly like ham, over the top. You know, she is the friend on the 70s sitcom, and that's what she's there to do. And then, like, the moment where she is registering, like she hears, okay, Wanda's a twin. Wait, like I know that. I know something about that. And like everything that she is sort of cycling through on her face and that whole bit, also truly, truly incredible to watch. I am really, really excited to see where they take this character and what they do with her going forward. I noticed today that the very last thing that we hear in that sort of like jumble of sounds as she's entering the hex is Carol's voice saying, your mom is really lucky. When they were handing out kids, she got the toughest one. Teared up a little. It's fine. I'm fine now. I've recovered. but I am really, really excited to see what she and Marvel do with this character going forward.
Listen, coming off of the DCU stuff,
I thought we weren't going to talk about that.
I can't help it. I can't help it. Listen, the thing that Marvel does really well that the DCU tried to skip over, and part of the reason that they're having such problems is that they never did the like character introduction stuff that Marvel does incredibly well. They just wanted to land in the middle. They wanted to get to the Avengers stuff without like having an Iron Man one and two and all of that stuff. So it was really impressive to me how good Marvel has gotten at introducing characters to us. And the fact that Monica gets like a whole superhero introduction, like within the confines of an episode. I loved it so much. And I know it was like super tropey, but that's why I loved it. Like when she lands, she is going through the hex and she's got the voices and she lands in the hero pools. Yes. I was like, yes. Like I thought that was so wonderful, especially like I said, because we are watching this like darker story and we are watching sort of this other hero who's at the peak of her power and almost in a bad, in a dark way. But then to see like the birth of another superhero kind of in the middle of that, I thought was really neat. So I am also really excited for this character. I thought her end was a little not as satisfying. I mean, it was left open for very obvious reasons, but her beginning was everything.
There's also a really delightful little moment to this point about like introducing stuff where her and the twins, like Monica runs up and we see that one of her powers is that she can absorb bullets, basically, to stop the evil military that was just gonna shoot two children. She runs in front of those bullets, and then Tommy, Billy, whichever one is Wanda like powers, I think, magically catches the bullet, and they have this quick little exchange where she turns around, she's like, oh hey, nice trick, and he says, oh I like yours too. And it's so great because they are both technically like children of the MCU, like because that is how, you know, we first met Monica. And I don't know. The reason that none of this stuff ever feels sort of retcon-y is that it is a matter of just looking at the threads that they have and just choosing which ones they are going to pick up. It is that everything that they are creating lays so much out there that, you know, whatever thing comes next has a ton to play with. And so it's just a matter of saying, okay, this is what you have laid out before me. Which of these things do I want to like pick up and weave into this next thing that I'm doing? Yeah, I'm really excited to see Monica, whatever Monica gets up to in Captain Marvel 2.
Well, I think she's also probably going to be in the Nick Fury show.
There's going to be a Nick Fury show? I missed that.
Yeah.
I already forgot about that. Oh my God.
Yeah, the Nick Fury show is going to be taking place with him and the Skrull. And so I'd imagine that she might be a part of that. And it would be really weird if she wasn't a part of Captain Marvel 2, unless Captain Marvel 2 takes place entirely like in the cosmic.
No, she is already she's part of the cast.
I mean, like literally everything that's just been said is just to like just proof of the massive playground that they yes. built for themselves.
Right, yes, yes.
And I mean, I guess where we're headed to is that Wanda and Doctor Strange, right?
Right.
And so they tell us in the final episode, Catherine Hahn says, Agnes says, that the Scarlet Witch is even more powerful than the Sorcerer Supreme. And I just hope they keep that energy because anything that tells me that she's weaker than Doctor Strange, I reject it. I reject it.
Correct.
Not only has this been just like a great show to, you know, watch for all the entertainment reasons, but also just for the fantasy reasons of, if you could wander yourself into any shows from any decades, like which would they be? I know personally, like 50s, I'd probably still go with Dick Van Dyke because of the like the his job and the comedy writing aspect and them just like all bullshitting in a room writing comedy. It just seems like fun. Mine are all going to be like mostly like friend based. Like, you know, I'll probably do like Happy Days. 80s, definitely got to go Cheers. 90s, Seinfeld, just because I finished watching that. And I feel like I'd be like morally the best person of that group.
So you can feel morally superior.
Yeah. Like very easily too. And then for the 2000s, I'd go probably like Parks and Rec. Although technically that was like 2009. I'd still go with it. Screw it.
I don't know that I could go quite decade by decade in the way that you did. I will say that at some point during like the watching of this show, I opened Hulu and Hulu asked me if I wanted to start watching Mary Tyler Moore. And I was like, sure. So I've been like very slowly just sort of like watching that whole show from the beginning. And that sounds lovely. I don't know. She works, just go like work at the TV station and, you're going to make it after all. That theme song. I feel things every time. My other answer would also be 90s friends, because all you do is sit in a coffee shop all day. That sounds great. They don't do shit. I mean, they ostensibly have jobs, but they don't do those jobs.
No.
I just go hang out with my friends and drink coffee. That sounds wonderful.
I don't have good reasons for mine other than, like, these are the ones I like.
Yes, sure.
So, like, Bewitched, 70s, 80s. Who's the Boss?
Nice.
Or maybe, okay, Three's Company, 80s.
Oh my God, Three's Company. Yes.
I took it back immediately. I think Who's the Boss was like 80s to 90s, so maybe that could be like slotted into there.
It bridges, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it bridges. I don't have a good answer for the 2000s. I wasn't a Friends fan. I don't know, early 2000s, but yeah, those are the three I'd pick.
Ooh, this is a little tough. I'll bridge the 50s and the 60s. With the Andy Griffith Show, because it just seems so peaceful and quiet, which is exactly what I want out of everything. So there's that. Once you get into the 70s and 80s, I'm not really sure. I don't know if I have a good pick there, but the 80s, Cheers for sure. Again, I'm not in mortal danger in Cheers. And it just seems like a nice place to just hang out, you know? And then once you get into the 2000s, honestly, just because of the locations, it would be Will and Grace. I would like to hang out with those people, all of them. I like Will. I like Grace. I like everybody on that show. And I want to be in Grace's apartment, frankly. I love that apartment so much. I think that's it. I think I would end right there. Just let me stay in Will and Grace's apartment forever.
Wonderful.
And on that note, that brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you to Nick and Rich for joining us this week, and thank you all for listening. We'd love to hear all of your thoughts on WandaVision and also on what sitcom you'd hex yourself into. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com. You can also find us on Twitter at snark_squad. You can find me at My Name is Marines.
I'm at Sweeney Says.
I'm at Rich Cammy.
I'm at NG Jenkins.
You can also check us out on YouTube under Snark Squad, where we do our weekly live shows. We'll be covering Loki every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. This podcast is a Snark Squad production. This episode was edited by me, and the music is by Stefan Jin.
Oh, Frasier. I would be perfect for Frasier. I worked in radio. I would be really great at giving bad advice. And he has an epic apartment. That's where I would hex my... It would be Frasier. That's... Okay.
I love that for you.
My one thing of like... I was like, oh, duh, was Boy Meets World.
I was. I thought about Boy Meets World.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch is the other one that I feel like I left out that I... Yeah, Sabrina the Teenage Witch is really my number one answer. Because it's like magical, but still wholesome, you know?
The Wonder Years.
Wonder Years, damn.
Peaceful, beautiful.
For a 2000s, I was also thinking about Scrubs, because then you just get to be a doctor without any of the work to be a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really into any of these sitcoms, which is really most of them, where it seems that people have like jobs and money, but don't do things. I love that. That's the life for me.